This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hi, I'm David Stein. When I'm not talking to other people about money on Money for the Rest of Us, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today we honor all those who made the ultimate sacrifice so we can enjoy the freedom to make this joke of a podcast in some grimy basement. And what better way to spend the day than by hanging out with those we care about, binging lots of great nerdy movies, and listening to an epic story about a guy who paid off his house in 4 years. From the Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast, today we welcome Andy Hill. And why can't 70% of workers save for retirement? We'll discuss that during our headline segment. Plus, we'll toss out the Haven Lifeline to a lucky caller and nerd out over some amazing and truly geeky movie trivia. And now, two guys who played the part of the gremlins in the movie Gremlins, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
And let me be the first to welcome you to Memorial Day. Welcome to the Stacky Benjamin Show, Westwood One's exclusive breezy finance morning drive talk show. You know, exclusive for now, I suppose, for now. And the guy who exclusively is in the co-pilot seat, it's my good friend OG. You know, you're exclusively there for now.
I was going to say for now. Yep. Exclusively.
How are you, man? You got big plans today after we get done recording?
The whole weekend's been a big bender, so I'm just going to try to keep it going.
Is that because the in-laws are in town? Are we continuing that theme?
You know, I try not to have that, like, be overly... Try not to have that be super overt, but it does seem that every time they get here, we are running very low on all manner of alcohol. And so when I feel really bad when they show up and I come back from the liquor store with like a carton full of stuff, I'm like, oh, you guys are here again. Ka-chink.
And your mother-in-law says, yeah, but we don't drink. You're like, so?
I know.
Hey, if you're ready to pay off your student loans, big thanks to Student Loan Hero for supporting the show. If you are ready to pay off your student loans while you're not making payments this summer and you want to keep going, well, guess what? You can get your custom repayment plan today. See how you can lower interest rates, decrease monthly payments, find forgiveness, whether it's refinancing, lower payments, forgiveness, all the things going on with student loans today. Lots and lots of changes. Head to studentloanhero.com. We got a great show, OG. Andy Hill, who's been with us a few times on the roundtable.
I know him.
We've never had him tell his story, though. Paid off his mortgage in four years.
I've heard his story a whole bunch of times. That game day. Hey, guys, I got one. I got a good one. How about I tell a story about the time that I paid off my house in 4 years?
Yeah. Oh, let me move my piece here. Did I tell you, by the way, that I paid my house in 4 years?
I don't know if you noticed, but I was in a magazine. And they talked about this thing that I did. Did you know this thing? I paid my house off in 4 years.
Which way to the restroom? Is it near the place where I paid my house off in 4 years?
I think it's over there.
We got a great show. Andy Hill from Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast joins us today. But first, we have some headlines. So let's get started.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from MarketWatch. This is written by Elizabeth Buchwald. Did you wonder, OG, what people are spending those $1,200 stimulus checks on?
60-inch plasma TVs at Costco. Priced conspicuously at $1,200.
$1,199.99. Mm-hmm. Looks like a deal. Wow. It's amazing that the amount they're charging is exactly
in my pocket right now.
$1,199.99 for them, a penny back for me. That's good. Oh no, there's tax. There's tax.
I'll just put that on my credit card.
Elizabeth writes this headline: Americans use their $1,200 stimulus checks to splurge at Walmart, Target, BJ's, and Best Buy. Here's what they're buying. While many Americans have used their stimulus checks to cover basic needs such as groceries, mortgage, or rent, there's evidence people are also spending money on non-essentials, including electronics, clothes, and toys, according to major retailers. Call it relief spending. Oh boy. Relief.
Oh my God. What kind of,
what a relief it is to overspend. What a
horrible person to actually come up with this term. Whoever came up with this term should be relieved from their ability to write about personal finance.
I don't know if I hate that term more or less than retail therapy.
I hate this more.
Nothing therapeutic about just going and blowing cash. So call it relief spending.
And then regretting every second of it for the rest of your life.
As it was heavily influenced by stimulus dollars, leading to sales increases in categories such as apparel, televisions, video games, sporting goods, oh boy, and toys. Walmart chief executive Doug McMillon said during the company's earnings call Tuesday.
He said, cha-ching.
Target.
Thank you, U.S. taxpayer.
BJ's Wholesale Clubs and Best Buy also saw increased consumer demand for discretionary goods in mid-April as the stimulus payments from the $2.2 trillion CARES Act flowed into Americans' bank accounts and then right out. I added that last part myself. The company's CEO said this week, Apple saw an uptick in demand for its products across the board, CEO Tim Cook said April 30th.
In other news, Apple also said that they were unable to fulfill most orders because most Apple products cost more than $1,200.
I spent my $1,200 on a boat down payment. AirPod. At what point does somebody have to think to themselves, I'm going to use this as an opportunity and not an opportunity to make my video games look better, but an opportunity to finally get on the right track?
Nope. It'll never happen, my friend.
And do you think that's education? Do you think it's something even more systemic, just the way we're brought up and the people we're around? Or is it just us as basic humans? I get $1,200 that I didn't know was coming my way. And I think about all the shiny stuff I could have that could make the day at home a little brighter.
But I think the funny thing is that you did know it was coming. There is a difference between found money and something like that. Like truly, truly, truly walking in the park and a $20 bill blows around and you go, sweet, I get to go out to lunch today. That's found money. The thing that they forecast and talked about for the better part of a month and a half that comes in your bank account for the specific purpose of making it so that you can put food on the table because maybe you weren't able to continue working or whatever. Fine. You know, I don't know. It's silly.
It is frustrating. It is really frustrating to read that.
But we knew it was happening.
We did know it was happening. But we're so, I hate being so cynical, but it's just.
Told you so.
I know.
Because then we get to do that. Yeah. I do have some good news out of this. I talked to a person this past week. You know, we did all those 30-minute calls. We're going to wrap those up here this week, so we're not going to do any more of them. But somewhere in the 150 to 200 30-minute phone calls in the last month and a half. And I talked to somebody who said that they were pretty much donating all of their stimulus money.
Oh, see, that's nice.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. So if you feel bad about buying a TV at Best Buy and you go, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that. What should I have done instead? If you don't need the money, maybe give it to somebody who does. Just an idea.
Our second headline comes to us from The Motley Fools by Maury Bachman. This is the reason almost 70% of workers can't save for retirement. Do you know what the reason is?
Because they spend their stimulus money on TVs.
That's probably it. Maury writes, though Social Security helps seniors pay the bills, those benefits aren't designed to sustain retirees in the absence of other income. Social Security will replace about 40% of the typical worker's pre-retirement wages, but most seniors need roughly twice that amount to maintain a decent standard of living once they're no longer earning a paycheck from work. And that's where personal retirement savings comes in. But not everyone enters retirement with a loaded IRA or 401k. And for almost 70% of workers today, saving for the future is off the table for one big reason. They have too much debt. We spend too much of our money, OG.
Pretty much what I said, isn't it?
Yeah. We had fun earlier with money that we didn't have. So now we, hey, I can't save because I had that big blowout and needed to take
just a little bit. Just, you know, it's only $200 a month. This is a very common theme. And I'm certainly not the first person to have identified this. Maybe the most notorious person for identifying it is that fellow Kiyosaki, Robert Kiyosaki, Robert Richard,
Robert Bill, yeah.
Bob, somebody,
Bob Kiyosaki,
some dude. I just call him Mr. K when I call him up. I'm like, yo, Mr. K, what's up? But he identified in all of his material about consumerism and more specifically around buying stuff as you upgrade your life. You know, as you get a promotion, you buy the bigger house. As you get another promotion, you buy the bigger house. And I've noticed this as a theme. People who are wealthy later have managed to keep that expense in check. It's so telling. I think the great thing is now with interest rates the way they are, you know, we've talked and everybody's heard of the story about interest rates being really low. Now is such a great time to tear that Band-Aid off and go get that 2.5 or 2.8 or whatever percent rate and do it for 15 years so that you can spend the next 15 years saving that money. Don't do it in the, for the 30-year one. It's not that big of a difference. And I've argued with people about this. They say, well, you know, I looked at the 30-year and the 15-year and it's an extra $250 payment. And that's just a lot of money. If you're making 80 grand a year, you've got 250 bucks. I don't care. I will die on that hill. You know, and if you make more than 80 grand, if you're like, I make 280 grand, you definitely have 250 bucks just floating around because our spending just fills, as evidenced by what we just talked about, whatever our bank account is. You know, your life just ebbs and flows based on what's going on. There's certainly a lot of people that are struggling right now. So this isn't a blanket statement, but there was a time when I made 30 grand and everything was okay. And there was a time when I made 60 grand and everything is okay. And there's a time when I made 100 grand and everything is okay. I can't tell you that the amount of happiness is that much greater, you know, once you go past, once you get your lips above the water, right? There is a period of time where every dollar you make, you have to spend on, you know, sustenance or keeping your family afloat. And all of that's true. But if then you take that extra little bit, sorry, if you take that extra little bit and go, oh, I finally got $200 extra every month. You know what I should do? Get a car because it's $200 a month. Whew, I got another pay raise. Now I've got another $200 a month. You know what I should do? Get another car or buy a bigger house or whatever. You always, you know, you can only eat so much food. That's it. I mean, you can only consume so much electricity. I don't care if you have every light on in your house. There's a maximum amount of electricity you can use in your life. There's a maximum amount of water that you can consume in your house. Everything else above that is discretion. So start saving it. Dang it.
I think we think about debt. We don't think about the fact that we're locking in a decision in the future that I may or may not want to make in the future. You know, who says 2.5 years from now, I want to be stuck with the same decision that I made today? I think we take it too cavalierly when we go, yeah, you know what? $700 a month for the next X number of years. Game on.
That's true. There's no car payments at $200 now. They're all $500, $600, $700 for sure. Well, and you're seeing that you personally are experiencing the other side of this. So because you don't have all of that, you're beginning to think about and execute on all of the flexibility that that provides you, the flexibility of moving, the flexibility of taking a different job, you know, your spouse taking a different role. And if you were sitting down and looking at your bills with your bride and you're like, well, we got this payment, 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 and then we got to eat still, you wouldn't have the same flexibility. You wouldn't be able to go do the stuff that you're going to do, not to mention save money, you know? So it's such a long lasting, ongoing, you know, death by 1,000 paper cuts, really.
It's a great time to have flexibility with all the restaurants open, museums open, the ability to travel.
Thank God.
Without worrying. Right? Yes.
You just have to be in the 25% of people that can do it.
I
was here first. I'm in the 25% that can go to the mall today.
I just have to wear a jumpsuit and with with gloves and like a hazmat uniform when I head out.
The mop suit.
I've always wanted to wear that. I've always wanted to put that on.
Well, for everybody who's been in the military, I can, I'll be on this side of it with them. No, you don't. Basically, here's, if you want to experience it, do this, get out about four garbage bags, time around your body, including your face, poke little holes in it, and go outside. It needs, if, for the full effect, it needs to be about 105 outside, and then you put it on, and then you need to go jog for like 5 miles with a big rubber suit on, breathing out of a straw.
Cool. Sign me up.
Carrying a whole bunch of crap.
That sounds fantastic. I think, I don't know, that's our takeaway. I think our takeaway from this piece is, please don't think about things in terms of payment. Think about life in terms of trying to be unencumbered. And then from our first headline, thinking about that big screen TV with your stimulus check.
Do it, baby.
It'll look good in the back of your tent.
Keep up with the Jones.
Well, this is a day, Memorial Day, for those of you outside the United States, that we remember people that made the ultimate sacrifice to defend the United States of America. But for that reason, OG, I like to think about uplifting stories and people that have done things that have been, you know, maybe not nearly as heroic as today represents, but definitely something that we can grab onto and use as inspiration as we all try to do better with our money. And our friend Andy Hill, who in Michigan lived down the street from me, which I thought was incredibly cool that I was going to live in the same neighborhood as Andy. He's the host of the Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast, a wildly popular show, which talks about better marriages, teaching your kids more about money and being able to handle your money better. Andy is the perfect guy, I think, for today, OG, because he paid his mortgage off in a very, very short period of time. And even though he's been on a roundtable a few times, we've never asked him for the whole story. And I thought, what a better story on a day like today for somebody who naturally is as uplifting as Andy is to tell a story as uplifting as Andy's story. So here he is, my friend from the Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast, Andy Hill. And here, socially distant in the basement, 6 feet away, Mr. Andy Hill. How are you, man?
I'm great. The 6 feet feels good.
Happy Memorial Day, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you. Same to you. Same to you. Yeah, it's happy to be celebrating. Good weather's now here in Michigan. All that good stuff.
But you've been spending all this time with the family, and it's going to be another day with the family.
Yes. The quarantine continues, even on Labor Day. But yes. It's been rough trying to figure out the whole balance between school and work and entrepreneur life and all that stuff. It's been very difficult.
It's all mixed up. It's all one thing.
Yeah, it's nuts right now. Absolutely.
I want to ask about your life before you decided to make your big move. Were you already saving before you decided to do the big thing we're about to talk about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It became, well, let me ask what the big thing is. The big thing is leaving the job?
No.
Oh,
no.
The
big thing I want to talk about today is actually paying off your mortgage.
Ah, there we go. Yes, I just want to make sure.
He's like, which big thing are we talking about? Yes, leaving your job is for a subset, but I think for everybody out there, whether they have a job or not, there's a big number of people that want to pay off their mortgage. And frankly, the fact that you did it so young is something I really want to talk about because, yeah. You know, there's mathematicians listening to this that are going to say that was the wrong
move. Oh, yeah. You can't put it into a calculator.
Absolutely.
Doesn't work well.
Right. So were you saving before you decide to pay off your mortgage? Were you saving?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Nicole and I had made a plan before we decided to buy our house to live on a lot less than we made. So at that point in our lives, both of us were working. We had two young kids. We figured out a way to live closely to around 40 to 50% of our income at that time because we had some big goals like paying off our mortgage. So that, yeah, we were savers.
Paying off a mortgage was a goal of yours from the beginning then.
Well, it became a goal because we were living in my bachelor pad before that, and I was very happy living in an 1,100 square foot bungalow with the mortgage that we had. It wasn't that bad. My wife did want to move to a larger home to have a little bit more space. We were having our second kid, but with that purchase, it felt a little bit claustrophobic to me because the mortgage was going to get bigger and I would have to continue to work in a job that I was not really that excited about to pay for a home that I would have for a very long time. So I wasn't too excited about getting a larger mortgage. And that's where some of the conversations happened between her and I about paying off the mortgage early so we could get both. We could have the mortgage-free life and the house that she wants.
It's funny because this is a talk about your psyche, but I think about somebody saving as a, you know, back in the day when I was a financial planner, I think about somebody already saving 40% of their income. And then you're telling me that upsizing your house is going to make you feel claustrophobic. Where does that come from? Like that big savings rate. I'm sure that after having the mortgage, you know, upgrading the mortgage, you'll probably cut that rate to 20%, which is still above what the average American does.
Honestly, I think looking back on it now, I think it was just my, I was not very satisfied in the work that I was doing. And I felt like it was psychologically something like I have to save more so that I can have some options down the road. And for me, that became, you know, saving more of our money, being able to save for retirement early so that we would have, a long stretch and have the ability for that to grow, paying off our mortgage early so that we would have lower expenses and not have to work in the industry or industries that both my wife and I were not super pleased in our choices after college.
So she wasn't happy in her job either.
No, I mean, we both kind of fell into the communications marketing industry out of college just because it was something that we thought we should do. Communications degrees, you didn't have to go to as many math classes. So we're like, hey, let's do that. Honestly, it was a choice out of school. And then we fell into it and then found out, wow, this isn't really something that we're super passionate about after doing it for a decade and a half. And that seemed to be the way out for me, at least, to say, hey, if we can supersize our savings, at least then you can work part-time, sweetheart, or you can go full-time as a stay-at-home mom, and then we'd have more options. And then on the opposite side, it was then, well, how can I start to do some of that as well, maybe work part-time, or at least work in a field that I would enjoy more?
Yeah. Whose plan was this really?
Yeah, it was me originally when I came up with the plan to pay off the mortgage. She thought I was nuts, but she wasn't too surprised about it. When we got together, I always come up with these kind of big plans of things that I want to do, big ideas. You know, she likes that I see them through, but she also doesn't like me making so many big plans. So when I brought it up to her originally, it was one of those things where she says, okay, why? And then how are we going to actually do that without upsetting our lives today? Because I still want to enjoy life. You know, for me to say living on 40%, or I'm sorry, saving 40%, can sound uncomfortable to some people, especially if you're only saving 5% or living paycheck to paycheck. So how can we make that happen and still enjoy our lives today? So that became the conversation together.
Did that decision to pay off your mortgage early then, did that affect your relationship at all?
In the beginning, it became a really exciting thing that we were both rallying around and we figured out a way to do it. We were making good money combined at that time. So it wasn't too hard. I mean, we did do some things to lower our expenses further. But when she, when we made the plan together for her to go and be a stay-at-home mom, we only had one income coming in at that point. So then things became a little tighter. So yeah, some more money fights happened. Some more conversations about what each of us feel is the right thing to spend money on. And we have different views on money. And through some conversations and eventually marriage therapy, we were able to distill some of those backgrounds on money and why they might be different, but they're still very important to the other person. So I had to learn to put my empathy hat on a lot more during that process. It was very challenging, but we ended up figuring out ways for it to work for both of us.
Was it the third party that helped you do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because when you have your heart set on something, whether it's her with the, hey, let's keep living our current lifestyle and enjoy life today. I think she was, I don't want to say that she was not down with paying off the mortgage. I thought she thought it was a great idea too.
Sure.
But as long as there wasn't, hey, let's still make things happen for us today. But yeah, I mean, it definitely helped to have a third party there to say, hey, think about it from her perspective and what she's been through her life. And then maybe you can step in her shoes and really have that empathy. And then vice versa for me, too. She was able to do that. Our marriage counselor was able to help us to do that for Nicole, too. Stepping in my shoes saying, he doesn't really like what he does.
Yeah.
And
he's got to get out of here.
He's got to get out of here. So this is his way to do it. So how can we figure out how to do that together? So once we are able to do that, step in each other's shoes and figure it out together, that's when we were able to find some middle ground.
That's so interesting because I had a mentor tell me a long time ago that every discussion is a cube and the key to winning, even though you know, everybody wins or nobody wins in these types of discussions, the best way to win is to see the other person's side of the cube. And that's really sounds like what both of you had to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still something I remind myself to do on a daily basis, whether it's a conversation about money or a conversation about anything else in our marriage or just personally with friends. Yeah. It's a great practice to do. And it's very hard to do, too, because if you're short on time and you really like your idea, that's very difficult to think on the other side and try to put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah, I find myself too. I get on a kick and with Cheryl, I just become a bulldozer.
Yeah.
You know, it's like my way or the highway.
It's easier to do that, right? It's easier just to kind of bowl over. But then over time, it's not easier.
No. Yeah, yeah.
We've created a lot more trouble.
Yeah. It'll come out one way or another. Yep. Yes, absolutely. You know, when people do the debt payoff on Dave Ramsey's show, you know, as a Dave Ramsey fan, like I've been, that people go, well, they had a lot of income. You know, what type of income did you guys have when you had two of you working?
It's a valid point. Over the 9 years that we were doing our sort of marriage and our paying off of our debts and things like that, we had an average income of $190,000. So, yeah. I mean, we were very privileged to be in the position we're in. We also had great health. You know, a lot of people don't experience that over a period of time. Both of our parents helped us to pay for our undergrads. So this is a privileged position to be in, to be able to do this. That being said, there's other people with different incomes all around. And if we could use that as an excuse of why other people can't do that, that can be dangerous too. So
no, and I think that's a great point because whether it's paying off your house or paying off that one credit card, whatever it is, just setting a goal and attaining it. I remember there was this woman when I was a financial planner at American Express, and this woman was the number one advisor in the nation, and her dad was a bigwig at Boeing. And so she would get these Boeing executives as clients through her dad, right? Which, yes, she had the access and the ability to get them. But you know what? When I met her, she still had to work her butt off, and I don't care who is your dad. You're not going to hand over your millions or whatever it is to somebody who doesn't know what the hell they're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So she had that ability. And I think for all of us, it's figuring out what your competitive advantage might be. Are you able to hustle better than somebody else? Do you have an income stream? Do you have whatever it is? And how can you make that work for you? And you guys did. But when you started off before the mortgage and you were saving 40%, you said you cut some stuff to get to the 40% savings. Yeah. What were those first cuts that I would bet are probably the easier ones?
Sure. A lot of it was on the entertainment side. So, I mean, it was just the two of us before we had kids, and we were going out a lot, going to concerts, going to restaurants and things like that. And as
You were living in a part of Detroit, which is like fun city, Royal Oak, right?
It's a lot of fun, a lot of places to go, a lot of restaurants. And so that wasn't super easy, but we did scale it back a bit. And that was when we learned that we were going to be parents. So, I mean, naturally, we're drinking less and partying less already. So that was sort of a transition there for us. But then we started to do some other little things to kind of ratchet things down a little bit. We started to shop at lower cost grocery stores like Aldi. That kind of helped us to take things down. We were spending about $900 a month. And then with that change, once we had our family, we were spending about $600 a month.
More mouths.
Yeah, but more mouths, spend less.
Less money.
It's just there's different ways to slice it. I mean, and we did other things like look at high deductible insurance plans. You know, if we have the money and savings, so can we take on more of the brunt? Like if we got a high deductible healthcare plan or higher deductibles in some of our other insurance plans. So those little things helped us to save a little bit over time. We eventually, about 2 years into our marriage, had paid for cars, so we didn't have any lease payments or anything like that. So if we looked at some of those things like the transportation side, the food side of things, it can make a big difference. And then the mortgage itself was a big difference too.
I want to go back to the Aldi thing because I don't think just going to Aldi takes you from $900 to $600. You must have started doing something like meal planning ahead of time.
Yeah, meal planning, making lists before we go, you know, instead of just going there, like, you know, the Costco trap. You go to Costco and you're like, I'm going for that one thing. And you walk out with $500 worth of stuff. It's
a pallet of ketchup.
Exactly. I need these yellow pads, 4,000 of them. Right. So making a list before you go, dialing down to what are my actual needs before my wants as I go. And then, shopping at a place that can give you a little bit better deal on what you're buying.
Did you find anything quality-wise in your life went down?
We definitely had to say no more to friends and family for things that we were excited about, both of us, you know, vacations, going out, things like that.
How did that go over at first?
Well, in the beginning, as you start to share your journey with people and saying, hey, here's the thing that we're doing that's maybe a little bit different from others, you get a little bit of, well, why? You know, why you're doing that? Let's have some more fun today. You're going to miss out and things like that. And as we started to think about what our financial goals were and where we wanted to go, it was easier down the road to say, you know what, we're not going to do this today so that we can have this tomorrow. And that helped us to move things along. Didn't make it a ton easier, but it helped us at least.
So when you start paying off the mortgage then, before you go to one income, you're on two incomes, mm-hmm. you decide to start paying the mortgage off early.
Yep.
Did you use any strategies there over and above just writing a check for more money?
Yeah, sure. We would get together once a month for something we would dub the budget party. So Nicole and I would get together, much to her chagrin. I called it a party because she didn't really want to show up for the party. So I figured if I used some fun words like that, then she might show up.
The budget fiesta.
Budget fiesta. And yeah, we would, have a glass of wine. We'd have some fun. We'd look over the numbers, but mostly it would be talking about our dreams and where we want to go with those. So I would try to do a lot of the heavy lifting beforehand of like tracking the numbers and making sure it was there and then having her show up for the party and share the details and say, here's where we are. Here's what we're planning on spending this month. Are you okay with what we've got in here? Just to make sure we're both on the same page for our spending plan. And yeah, that was our opportunity to collaborate each month to make sure that we're on the same page so that we didn't have to talk about money all month long.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave us that stopping point for us. That was a tactic that we took as a married couple.
But the thing that I found, because Cheryl and I do those meetings, but we do them on a weekly basis. But what I found is, even though you said that's a stopping point mm-hmm. for Cheryl and I don't know if it's this way for you, Nicole, but it's really a starting point.
Yeah.
Like I found we then have these natural conversations about money that we never would have had.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
They kind of last all week long.
Yeah. Well, for Nicole, she prefers to not talk about money all week long. So she's like, what can we do to get it all done today? So we don't have to talk about it very much.
Well, no. Cheryl does too. But what I mean about talking about money mm-hmm. is that, you know, if our money meeting's on let's say a Sunday afternoon on Wednesday, Cheryl will just go, hey, you were going to follow up about this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the phone bill didn't look like it was right. You were going to follow up on that. What happened there? And then on Friday, she'll say, hey, you know what? I was just thinking, maybe we could do this this trip to this one cool place.
Yeah.
You know, which is still part of the same conversation, but they're more about follow-up and aspiration.
I completely agree. It's like anything. You write down a list of things to do. You write down your goals or whatever. As long as you're talking about it beforehand, it gives you an opportunity to check in. How am I doing on those goals? And if it's with your spouse, then you're verbally doing that and making sure that you're on the same page.
But I do like, let's not have a bitch about money session.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, like, obviously, I've started a podcast and I'm on it right now with you, like, to talk about money. So I don't mind talking about it, but my wife does not.
Like, and cut. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That's Cheryl. That's so funny. She's like, well, that's probably why our wives get along so well.
That's right. There you go.
Then you go down to one income.
Yeah.
What changed then about making that happen? How much was your income then now?
Yeah. So at that point, I was making $160,000. She had already been at part-time at that point. So at that point, we went down to 160. So again,
So there's 30,000 gone.
Yeah, 30,000 gone. So pretty good, still very good income. But at that point, you know, we had moved to a very nice area with high taxes, with a mortgage that we had to pay aggressively.
Yeah.
And then all the other things that we wanted to do in life. We still wanted to be able to have our kids play in activities and sports activities, go on vacations if we can afford the money and things like that. As our kids were really young, that was some of the decisions we made. We didn't really go on a lot of vacations when my son was one or, you know, things like that. We were fine foregoing some of those things.
But you really, you wanted to keep the pace, though, on the mortgage.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. How big was the mortgage at first?
It started at $195,000.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
And so then you're on this phenomenal pace, paying it off quickly, using the extra money that you're making, shoveling it all there. You go down $30,000 and you didn't miss a beat. So where'd the haircut come from?
Yeah, it came from some of those little areas like shopping at the grocery stores, you know, cutting back on some of the...
Even more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of those things helped us to do it a lot.
Is that why your kids are thin?
That's right.
Is it really just malnourishment?
I'm mostly not feeding my children. No, they're good. They eat plenty.
we were joking.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
No, I mean, it was paying attention to the numbers a little bit more. I started side hustling a little bit at that time too, to make a little bit more money, bring things in. And we were just paying attention to the numbers a little bit more and trying to bring in money where we can. Some of the things we did at that point were like, hey, what can we do to like sell some things around the house that we don't use anymore? We got walking around, we could find 10 things here that we could sell on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, especially when you have young kids too. So you go through some of those baby equipment things pretty quickly. So you're looking at the crib you don't use anymore, or this chair or this swing. And it's like, all right, well, that's $50 there. That's $100 there. I used to have a moped that I would ride around in Royal Oak, and I sold that on Craigslist to get some more money. I had a road bike because I used to do triathlons, and I wasn't doing triathlons much as a young father anymore, so I sold that on Craigslist. So some of these things, when we get the money in, we just throw it again at the mortgage.
To the mortgage.
Yeah.
How often did you look at the bottom line?
Oh, I would say for me during the period of time, it was at least once a month to make sure everything was going the way it was going. But we tracked things in Mint, so we saw the changes as they were happening. And it was pretty addicting to see the number go down over and over again. And knowing that if we kept that pace up, that it would be gone in less than 5 years, and to never have a mortgage again was something that was mind blowing when we were thinking about that, because people live with mortgages their entire lives. There's nothing wrong with that choice. But for us, it was like, this meant freedom. For me, it meant freedom as well. So,
and so you got it paid off in exactly how many months?
It was just a shade under 4 years. So, that would have been, 47 months, something like that.
Wiped it all out. And it's funny because I know you just said Talat McNeely on your show from His and Her Money. And, he explained that story to us about how they sold stuff on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And there was a double whammy there.
Yeah.
Number one, you get the extra money. You can throw it on the mortgage because they paid theirs off quickly too. But on the other side too, the psychic energy of, hey, I got this stuff and I don't use it, you know, and you see it every day.
Yeah. And there's a sense of minimalism there that we all got excited about too. I mean, do we need all these things in our house? And that was something my wife and I actually worked well on, because she's very organized. She likes things in order. And so for her to have way too many kids' toys that we don't use anymore was a mess. And for me, it was like, hey, that seems like something we could sell on Craigslist. So it was a good way for us to come together there.
You guys agree on cleaning the house for two different reasons.
Right, exactly.
That's so, so awesome. A lot of times when people meet a big goal, like paying off the house that aggressively, that's a bunch of money that you were saving every month. People feel this, well, heck, you've been doing what you do long enough. You see this, right? People want to pay off a house. They want to pay off credit cards. They want to pay off whatever. And then they get done. And because there's no goal anymore, I've seen this 100 times, they go right back into debt, right?
Because
they bring up old habits and they don't keep going. How did you replace that? Now you've got all this extra income coming in. The house is paid off. Mm-hmm. What was the next step?
Well, the first thing that I had learned very well through our marriage therapy was that we needed to have that balance be a little bit more on Nicole's side for some fun. So we had a little bit more fun. We went on a lot of vacations in 2018, which was great because I love vacations and she loves vacations too. And it was something
you celebrated. That
was well deserved. We celebrated, which is something that we are excited about doing. We ended up getting excited about what the next step was too in our financial journey. And for us at the time, it was, hey, well, why don't we save up and buy our first rental property? Maybe that's something we should do. So let's just start piling up the cash in a savings account to do that. And since we've paid off the mortgage, why would we get a mortgage again? Let's try to just buy one in cash. That became really hard to do. The real estate market kept on going up and up, and the pace at which we were able to save in our savings account to buy a home outright here in Metro Detroit became very, very difficult to do. So we kept saving, and eventually it got to a point where, as we started to look at homes that we could afford for cash, and the process with which it takes to be a landlord and all the work that goes into it, and I fully respect landlords that do what they do. I know you've got a rental property. It became something that both her and I were like, I don't think we want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think we want to be rental property owners. Just because it's a great way to build wealth doesn't mean it's something that we want to do.
Yeah.
So we came to that realization, which was nice.
I'm selling mine right now.
And
I couldn't be happier. Don't get me wrong. It was great. It was fine. It worked out really well. But not having that anymore is fantastic. And focusing on the types of investments that I enjoy, more paper investments, far better for me, which is why it's all personal.
Yeah. Right? And to that point of like one less thing you got to worry about.
Right.
Too. Yeah, and for me, that was the whole point of the journey. Like, how can I create some freedom within my life so I have less things to worry about? So if I get a rental property and I have to worry about the tenants and make sure that they're paying me and all this, or get a property manager and make sure the property manager is doing his job, that just sounds like another job. So
it seems like part of what you were able to do then, because we talked at the top that you've had a couple big changes in your life, then you were able to do the real thing.
Yeah.
Which is leave your job.
Yep.
Some of that money must have gone toward being able to afford.
Absolutely.
Well, that's not having the lifestyle coming in anymore.
That's what all the savings ended up going to, actually. Yeah. So we saved for a while in the savings account, and it became, we ended up saving about $100,000 in a savings account. And that became, Nicole turned to me in the kitchen one day and was like, why are we doing this rental property thing? Why don't you just use that as like your runway to finally leave your job and do something that you like to do? And I was like, well, you know, I'm at this job and I'm not fully vested yet. And maybe I should stay until I'm vested. And that way we have more money for retirement. She's like, just stop it and go for it. I'm like, all right, I'll go for it. So just a couple months after that, I gave my notice and went into entrepreneurship full time. So it's been great so far.
It's funny, though, how often we remind ourselves of the handcuffs, right? Yeah. We just keep thinking about the handcuffs. No, I can't right now because, and then all this garbage, and she knocks it right away.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is I was waiting to be vested for these 7 years, so I only had 1 year left to get that vesting. But I worked in corporate event marketing, and there's not a lot of event marketing going on right now. So that single stock that I would have had a lot of investment in is
not going
to be doing that well.
And I'm not laughing because it's funny.
Yeah.
I'm laughing because it is so weird that you were going to stay around for that. And look at what happened.
Oh, she brings it up all the time. She's like, I'm glad I told you to do that.
Yeah.
Because you would have been waiting around for nothing.
What do you worry about now?
What do I worry about now? I think I just try to find a good balance. Now that I got so excited about this entrepreneurship thing at the beginning of the year, I think it's trying to find a balance of being able to have a good balance of family and work, of a work that I love. I really love the work that I'm doing, and I'm so excited about it that sometimes I can get a little too excited about it and forget all the other important people in my life, right?
That is so shocking.
Exactly. So yeah, it's finding that balance, finding if the desire is to say, hey, how can I work 30 hours a week? And that's like it. And then I create the other time for family and fun and hobbies and vacations and stuff like that. That sounds like a fun goal to try to figure out.
It's fun being able to turn the microphone process here around and to interview the interviewer. Cause I'm Marriage, Kids and Money. You're making other people sweat. So I'm glad I got to make,
I'm glad I got to put you through the paces.
Yes. Tell us what's coming up on the show, man.
Yeah, actually, I mean, it's funny enough. We talk about this quite a bit on the show is I invite other families who've had the ability to pay off their mortgage. I invite them on and they tell us why they did it, how they did it, and now what they're doing with that freedom. It's something we do on a monthly basis on our show, and it helps us to help people figure out if this is the right decision for them, because paying off your mortgage maybe isn't the right decision for you. So we talk about, well, why wouldn't you just invest the money in the stock market instead of paying off the mortgage? That's a question I like to ask because I want to make sure the people who are listening right now see both sides of it, because there are other sides to paying off the mortgage or not paying off the mortgage. So that's a debate and a fun thing that we talk about on the show. We also just invite other people who are looking for that family financial independence sort of thing. So there's a lot of people out there who are looking for a little bit of freedom with their life, maybe going to part-time. How can they do that? How can they physically make that happen by saving more and becoming more in control of their money? So we have a lot of those conversations on the show with a family focus.
It is so fun. And we'll link to Marriage, Kids, and Money on our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. By the way, we didn't get to this, but one thing we talked about that we were going to get to at the start was all those mathematicians saying that's a bad idea. But for you, the point is, it wasn't about interest rate. It was about cash flow.
Yeah.
You really wanted to cut that cash flow out so that you could live a richer life doing something else.
Yeah. The part of the financial independence conversation I like is the savings rate portion of it, because if you're able to lower your expenses to a point where you don't need to have as much to live, I think that's what excites me, as opposed to having the gigantic investment balance, whether it's up or down, depending on, you know, what's happening with the stock market. I liked the freedom that came with less commitments, less requirement to have a six-figure job.
Yeah.
If I don't want to have a six-figure job because maybe I didn't enjoy it as much, I then had that choice. So I was looking for choice and options, as opposed to the highest interest rate or the highest earnings I could get.
Yeah, because that math decision is a much longer.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely. Not a four-year game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
four-year game, that's a roulette wheel.
Sure, absolutely.
Where you're going to win.
Yeah.
Andy, thanks for hanging out and telling your story.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. This has been fantastic.
Hey, Stackers, I'll be your guide to navigate these extra geeky waters on today's podcast. I know I should be binging Saving Private Ryan on Memorial Day. Already did that. Hey, but did you hear there's a new Twilight book coming out? Joe's mom just told me that Midnight Sun is scheduled for release on, get this, August 4th. I can't wait for that. Come on, Stephanie. Could you really not come up with a better name than that? I mean, Midnight Sun. Totally like eighth grade cliche there. What kind of audience do you think you're writing for anyways? Although I'd be lying if I said I wasn't dying to see where Edward and Bella go from here. I mean, hashtag Team Edward, am I right? And if you're a real nerd, then you shouldn't have any issues answering some geeky trivia. Like, who is Gimli's father in Lord of the Rings or in Game of Thrones? Khal Drogo is the leader of what people? Approximately how many languages can C-3PO speak? But our big trivia question, it's this. Which movie franchise is the highest grossing of all time? I'll be back faster than you can say, I'll be back.
Big thanks to Student Loan Hero for supporting Stacking Benjamins. If you're ready to pay off your student loans, well, guess what? Student Loan Hero is the place with the plan. There's been a lot going on in student loan world lately, and if you want to stay on top of all the latest, plus make sure that your student loan plan is actually a plan and not just debt, it's time for you to visit Student Loan Hero. By the way, lots of people thinking about how they're going to pay for their education this fall. I know a lot of people wondering if they're going back to school in the fall. But if you do end up with either Zoom classes or classes, some type of class from home, or if you end up back on campus, you want to make sure that you have all the calculators, all the products, you've gone through all the quizzes, you've read all the must reads around student loans to help you successfully navigate the student loan landscape. So whether you're looking at income-driven repayments, Parent PLUS loans, defaults and delinquencies, forgiveness, lower payments, refinancing, any of the financial calculators around how to best pay student loans, head to studentloanhero.com for more. That's Student Loan Hero when you're ready for a better plan around student loans.
Hey, fellow nerds, it's Master Doug, the king of this nerdy realm, back with your healthy dose of trivia answers. If you're a nerdy movie fan like I am, then you'll have no issues with the answers to the barrage of questions I left for you right before the break. Like, who is Gimli's father? Well, it's Gloin, obviously. And Khal Drogo, the leader of what people? Give you a second here. It's the Dothraki! Duh! Approximately how many languages can C-3PO speak? Well, this one, I don't blame you for not understanding, but it's over 6 million. That is a major step forward for human-cyborg relations, isn't it? That guy could really be the key to the whole thing. And finally, our big question, which movie franchise is the highest grossing of all time? Well, coming in at number 2, grossing a whopping $9 billion is Star Wars. But I'm sure it doesn't come as any surprise that with gross earnings of over $18 billion, it's the Marvel Universe that takes the cake. Now, that's a lot of cheddar from the nerds of the world. Yeah, there's a joke there somewhere. Anyway, I got to get back to my movie binge fest. See ya!
We often talk, OG, about doing the math, and I find it interesting that, you know, a guy as young as Andy is paying off his mortgage early. And I know a lot of people have said, when you're as young as Andy is, why would you pay off your mortgage early? But when you're in the situation where he's in, where you really want to quit your job, it shows again that personal finance is personal, and getting rid of that loan has now, much like we talked about earlier, getting rid of that loan allowed him to quit and do the thing that he wanted to instead of trudging back into work again. So important to sometimes forget about the math and think more about your own personal situation.
Well, and I think you have to look at it from a different math standpoint. The math is still important. But just using that ubiquitous 4% rule, if your house payment is $2,000 a month, which isn't terribly off the wall, and use that 4% rule, you need $500,000 extra for financial independence to be able to pay your mortgage bill or your housing costs. And so, at some level, you have to think about it from that perspective also. If you're trying to get to the point of financial independence and you have a house payment, that's another $500,000 you got to have, or $1 million if your house payment is $4,000 a month. So I don't think it's a terrible idea. Somebody sends me a check for my mortgage balance, I'll tell you, I'll be pretty hard pressed not to pay off the mortgage instead of investing it. But I do think now that Andy's done paying off his, he should start paying off yours and mine. What do you think? He's so good at it. I bet you can't do it twice.
I don't have a mortgage anymore. So then OG's like, hey, why don't you triple down that on mine?
I bet you can't pay mine off too.
I double dog dare you. Big thanks to Andy for hanging out with us again today and telling his story. It's about time that we told Andy's story, because it's what an inspiration that guy is. Hey, let's throw out Dave and Lifeline, OG, and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they put what you value first. What is it? Getting Mr. Hill to pay off your mortgage? Is that what you value most?
That would be great. But you know what? On today, Memorial Day, you're talking about thinking about it the right way. If you're ever wondering like the other side of humanity and like how there are true, just straight up badasses in this world, you can just go over to the Medal of Honor Society and read some citations. So when someone earns a Medal of Honor, that usually comes with a whole big description of what they actually did. You read some of these stories and you're like, that's pretty crazy. That's straight up badass. So that's what I'm doing today. That's what I do on Memorial Day.
Yeah, it's spending more time, they write here, with your loved ones and having more time. And I think that, love that, OG. It's why they made buying quality term life insurance actually simple. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote. They had some big news last week about even tweaking their API even more, OG, to make the process even more streamlined than it already is. All we always hear from people is how streamlined the process is. It's just always getting better at Haven Life. Their application's super simple. It's all online. Prices are affordable. They're issued by their parent company, Mass Mutual, which is more than 160-year-old insurer. Today, we're going to throw out the lifeline to Eric. Say hi, Eric.
Hey, John. And what's the other guy's name again? Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'm only calling for the t-shirt anyways. I have a question for the two of you, even though I probably won't learn anything. My wife and I just found out we're going to have a baby boy in November. And I'm curious about what type of accounts or types of accounts I can set up on his behalf. I know I can set up a 529, but is there anything else that I can do? Can I set up a brokerage account on his behalf, or even some type of trust? It's worth noting that we both live outside of the United States. I still earn income from a company in Colorado, and all of my income falls into the Foreign Income Exclusion Act. But my wife only earns income outside of the United States. So I'll probably have to open up the account in my name, since she can't open up several types of accounts in the U.S. All right, that's all I got. Peace.
Thank you, Eric. Hey, congratulations on the baby. You know what he said? I was wondering what types of, it was like types of money nerds you can turn him into. Types of board games you can teach him as he gets older.
I thought he was going to ask, what's the secret to getting out of how to change diapers?
Oh, man.
Just retire from them.
Yeah.
Just declare it.
Because that will work. Nothing.
Not your first kid, but your third. It worked.
Say, hey, I'm done.
I just retired. I'm not doing that anymore.
Officially retired. There Too is old. No more. Go ahead
my
and
part take here's finished.
Take OG's advice on that one. And then you can also move into OG's spare bedroom.
Write us and let us know how that works out for you.
Great. All right, OG. So he's got an issue. What type of accounts can he open?
I wouldn't open any accounts for the kids. I would do the 529. You can do an UGMA account, right? A Uniform Gift to Minors Act account, probably at a local bank, or
I would say credit union. Obviously, you're a million miles away from a credit union, but, you know, whatever, online type deal. But that's relatively stupid, too, because bank accounts don't make any money. So I do the 529, maybe an UGMA if you want your kid to have a whole bunch of money at 18. But otherwise, I would keep investing in your own plans. And if it's important to you to make sure that your kid gets some cash, if you get hit by a bus, you know, then just make him the beneficiary, or better yet, have a really good estate plan that allows for that responsible distribution. But if you're still working on you, just like when you go flying and they say, hey, put the mask on you before you help other people, that's the same thing when it comes to financial planning. You need to make sure you're solid before you start worrying about your kid. I know that there's this great temptation because you go, gosh, if I would just put this money away when somebody would have done this for me and put 10 grand away, I'd be a millionaire by now. And that's true. And if you wanted to do something like that, I'm sure that, you know, you can, but make sure you're on track before you start throwing all this extra money downrange to your child. If you're going to do it, I would just do the 529 and UGMA account and recognize that at age 18, he's going to get the money.
Once your child is old enough to do some work for you, it is possible there are ways to open up a Roth IRA account for retirement if you want to give them a leg up and show them that that's important, OG. I might even see that at some point. You've also seen the statistics from a few different sources about how starting that account early can pay lots and lots and lots of dividends, just starting it at a small level. The problem is they're going to have to do some work for that money. And you don't want to lie about that. You want that to be the real deal.
Absolutely. You're not going to be able to convince somebody that your six-year-old went out and made $6,000, you know, to put money in a Roth, you know, unless he's like an actor or something. You know what I mean? Like, my kid mowed the grass six times last year. I paid him $1,000 a mow. Yeah, it's probably not exactly right, but it's noble. Trust me on this one, Eric. You ain't going to have any money left over anyway to give to your kid because they cost so dang much and they tend to come in sets. So like you have one and then all of a sudden, like a couple years later, another one shows up. I don't know how that works, you know, and then you got twice as much of that crap to deal with. So all the extra money you think you have right now is going to vaporize. Congratulations, nevertheless.
Well, thanks, Eric, again for the question. By the way, congratulations again on becoming a dad. It is so exciting, OG, to see people expanding the number of stackers in their family. It's always good.
We should make stacker onesies.
We do make stacker onesies.
Good.
StackyBenjamins.com/store. Lots of fun, crazy stuff. The 50s movie poster there. Somebody was showing off the buttons the other day. You can show off what a cool stacker nerd you are using the store. Hey, that's going to do it for today. Lots of people to thank. I'm going to let Doug do that. But big thanks to people that left us a review of this here show. And you know what? While mom puts those on the refrigerator, I do have to have a shout out to a group of people. You and I were talking about this, OG, just before we hit record. You never know when you decide to join a network or different group of people, how that's going to work. And I have to say a big thanks to the people at Westwood One, just the team over there from John to Kelly to Tammy to Agnes to Brian to Robert. We had some bumps. You may have seen some old episodes show up in your feed. We almost lost the back catalog, but the team successfully did it. And it is fantastic. Even while we were recording this, John has written me a text message talking about ideas that he has for promoting the show. And listen, whether it's us or any other financial show, promoting financial literacy, OG, is all what we're about. And as you know, when you look at the numbers of people listening to financial shows in general, we need a lot more. So if we can present it as fun and have people like Westwood One behind us, that's been great. So big, big thanks to the team there. You and I both. I mean, let's just open the curtain back a little bit. We're both a little worried. Whenever you do something like that, something that big, get a little worried that might not turn out the way you hoped.
Here goes nothing.
Yeah, sure has been better though, a lot better than I could have hoped for, and I hope for good stuff. All right, that's going to do it for today. Everybody have a safe Memorial Day. let's also say a big special thanks to the veterans around you on a day like today. Doug, take it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, I'll tell you what we should have learned today. First, take a lesson from our headline. Accumulating debt impacts your flexibility and your ability to build wealth for the future. Do yourself a favor and create a plan to knock out your consumer debt ASAP and then stay out. Second, take a lesson from Andy Hill. Hear bunches of people telling you not to pay your mortgage off early? Start with your goal and then look backward. Paying off debt is never a bad idea, and if you're in Andy's shoes trying to quit your job, that's probably the perfect move. But the big takeaway? Don't send Stephanie Meyer too many questions about Twilight on Twitter. That lady will block you faster than a werewolf can turn. I didn't mean it, Steph! What, you don't like I called you Steph? How about Stephanie? Your Highness? Oh, please, come on, just please let me back in. I'll do anything. Special thanks to our friend Andy Hill for coming down to the basement to share his story with us today. You can find his amazing podcast at marriagekidsandmoney.com or where all the finer podcasts are distributed. This show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and if you could only know what it really smells like down here. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remunerations. That's a big word. There's no way you take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial decisions, consult with a real financial advisor.
Normally, it would be wedding season. By the way, a big shout out to my nephew Logan and his fiance Julie, who decided instead of having their big wedding, they're going to have a small justice of the peace affair for now. They're going to go ahead and get married.
Got to make it legal, man. I like it.
Put a ring on it, Logan. Put a ring on it. And then they're going to have a big wedding later. That led me to look for, because there's
did I ever tell you the nightmare that I had about the time I was about to get married?
No,
I had this recurring nightmare that we would get married and then shortly after my new bride would become pregnant and that she would have the baby premature. And then my grandmother would be sitting there drumming her fingers going like, by my math, that's only 7 months. And I'm like, Grandma, the baby's 1 pound. It's a preemie. Like, she came out at 28 weeks. It's like a teeny tiny baby. Well, I guess that I know why we got married so suddenly. You know, my grandma's very prim and proper.
Yes.
And nothing escaped her and her judgment eye, which was, you know, I make it sound like she's a tyrant. She was not. But I could never get past that until we got past that like 9 month mark. I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. Because any, you know,
9 months in one day.
Yeah.
We're like, good.
It's legit.
We're good.
We made it.
It always amazes me. I mean, no offense to your grandma, but it always does amaze me how people can have judgment about other people's lives.
She was born in 1923. So to say that she's a little old school is an understatement, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
obviously there's obviously different ways that that can transpire, but nevertheless, we've all been through that.
Well, remember when your kids are little and they're having a meltdown in the middle of the grocery store and you see the couple that clearly has never had kids before, and they're giving you the look, can't you control your kids? And I would always just start
like, this is controlled. This is pretty under control, actually.
I would always start laughing. I'm like, oh, I can tell you don't have kids because you have no idea. You've no idea how this train rolls and how lucky you are that this is all that Nick or Autumn are doing at this moment.
So wedding season.
Well, yeah, when it comes back to the wedding, I paid my way through college partly by disc jockeying weddings. There were some weddings that you could tell were seemed like, you can't really tell from the ceremony, but seemed like things were going to be great for the couple. And there were times where they were already arguing on the dance floor during their first dance. They're arguing. You're like, wow. But wedding train wrecks are always amazing to me. And this is from moneywise.com, stories of called off weddings. And I wanted to go over a few of these, and maybe you, I don't know, OG, maybe you know of a called off wedding, but listen to this. My buddy was engaged to be married. Everything was going great up until about 2 months before the wedding, when the bride freaked out about something very minor during a family vacation and stopped speaking to him. They'd text once a day, so the other knew they were okay. They'd say, I love you. And she would assure him she still wanted to get married. 1 month before the wedding, she called it off. They still hadn't talked except for the text. He called all his people and told them the wedding was off. Only he forgot to tell one of his friends who'd been on his fiance's list, as he was a mutual friend. So he thought she was going to tell him. She thought that he was going to tell him. So nobody told the guy. So the guy went to the wedding, the place where the wedding was supposed to be. Mutual friend went to the wedding where he found a wedding. The bride had been seeing somebody else on the side, and she still went through with the wedding, but to a different guy, all on my buddy's dime.
Nice.
Just
that's fun.
Just amazing.
My apologies.
My fiance had issues. I knew that, this woman writes. I was going to be okay with becoming stepmom to three children and knew that I would be bringing home the bacon. I even bought a house that'd be big enough to house him and the three kids.
Committed.
What could be troubling about any of that? He told me he never married his baby mama and that he would leave my house at night for occasional night shift work as a cop. I asked to see the court decision regarding the kids just so I knew what was going on. He kept the first page from me that I now know read divorce decree. So when his parents made a second marriage comment, I was thrown for a loop. She thought he'd never been married before. I told him to leave and he swore up and down that was the only thing he'd lied about. I called his employer, in quotes, and it turns out he also wasn't a cop.
Nice. Scam artist. I often wonder about these, though, that were there other things along the way that you just didn't want to pay attention to? Spidey sense
there's
wasn't
gotta
tingling.
Be there's gotta be where you're like, yeah, but I like her so much, or I like him so much, and I'm sure it'll get better later.
Yeah,
there's gotta be. How about one more? I was standing at the entrance of the church when the bride was walking toward the stairs. She tripped and face planted on the steps. Being a wine farm, there was a lot of dirt everywhere, so her dress was filthy. She dusted herself off and kept walking. I noticed she was wobbling from side to side and thought she got hurt in the fall. As she started walking down the aisle, she was stopping to greet people, making jokes, making faces. And it immediately hit me. The bride's loaded. By the time she got to the groom, she was swaying from side to side and slurring. The best part is that she insisted the wedding proceed. The more the groom wanted to suspend the proceedings for a little bit, she insisted they proceed. Then she exploded at him in the church in front of everybody, shouting, accusing him of ruining her wedding day. And then she stormed out of the church crying. Can you? So we've all had those days where you woke up the next morning and you went, oh, did I say that? There's no way I did that. And it turns out, yeah, you did that. But having that be your wedding day.
All on video. Let's watch the wedding video again, Ma. Let's not.
This is
my favorite part.
She's high-fiving people walking down the aisle, screaming it.
And in this corner, weighing in.
I DJ'd some doozies. There was only one, though, that could be on this list. I have no idea how it ended. I'd never met the bride and groom face-to-face, but I talk to the bride, and I found out from her that it was her third time getting married. And hey, you know, no judgment. Sometimes it takes people.
Third time's a charm.
Three times. So I was just excited. We were getting paid. It's going to be fantastic. So their wedding reception was at this VFW hall. I set up my stuff. My brother was working with me at the time. And the bride and groom come in, and she immediately makes a beeline for our table. And she starts hitting on my brother and I.
Nice.
And I'm
setting up number 4 and 5 right out the gate.
And I think I'm a freshman in college. And here's how bad she's drunk, by the way. She's clearly drunk. And she is very well endowed. And she has on a plunging neckline dress. And she insists on continuing to lean over my table so the dress drops even more. And as I try to move to get out of the line of fire, she continues rearranging herself so that there's no way I can't see the goods.
I just love listening to you tiptoe around this.
Later on in the night, when everybody is drunk. And by the way, at this point, we're not the only people that the bride has decided that
accosted.
Yes. Yes. And husband number 3, oblivious to this. Just, I mean, maybe he's not, but he certainly seems to be oblivious to it. But he is super drunk as well. And the best man comes up to me and said, "Damn it, play some Alabama." And I said, "Well, some Alabama, what do you want to hear?" You know, and I threw out a couple good slow songs. And he goes, "No, play the whole damn greatest hits album." Because I showed him that I had the whole greatest hits. He's like, play the whole thing. And I said, "I don't think you want to do that." And he looks at me like, "You messing with me?
Do you know who I am?"
Yeah. Yeah. No, he gives me this stern thing. And I said, "Hey, listen, I like Alabama too, but I got to tell you, you got a room full of people here that are dancing and having a good time. They're all going to leave. They are all going to leave, and it's going to wreck the party if I play the whole album. So let's just pick a song." And the guy goes, "Boy, looks like you got some real nice equipment here. I got a baseball bat out in the back of my truck that says that you're playing the whole album." And I turn to my brother. I'm like, "Looks like we're playing the whole album." All right. Fantastic. Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month. And that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout out to 2 of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who is in the Army. Let's do 3. My Uncle Eddie, who was in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And 2 of them served in Vietnam, 1 served in Korea. And a big thanks to all 3 of my uncles, my dad's brothers, who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, Stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.